The material. Today is October
4th. We're learning Mishle. So I have a bit of cold. I came up with a little bit of a game. So I'll try to talk into the. Okay. Mishle is part of a large corpus of what we call wisdom literature. There's a fancy word for it. It's called sapiential literature. Homo sapien. It's stories that, or any body of the Tanakh that teaches man about the struggle of humanity. We probably struggle more than anything else that's out there. There's a Gemara that actually points this out. It's a mower looks out in the field and he sees all of nature, and he sees animals going about their business, and he just says, look how natural they are. They don't have their parnasa, they have what they need to live, they don't need clothing, they don't need health insurance, you know, they don't know where the tuition of their children is coming, you know. But whatever they need to do, we have to machanech our children, we have to make sure we're healthy. Whatever animals do, they do, you know, he oversimplifies. I'm sure that a lot of animals have fears about not being eaten that day, right? If an animal is not eaten and it gets to eat, that's a good day, right? For much of our history, we were also trying to eat, well, avoid being eaten. And most of our day was dedicated to finding our next meal, right? Or our mate, right? So that's what animals are doing. And that's what so Mishle is written to as any sapiential literature, is written to help us with these additional struggles as a result of being humans. We have to contend with all kinds of emotions and the like, right? I think animals can also be jealous. I think a dog can become very jealous. If a dog is a very loyal dog to a couple, and then they have a baby, I think that dog can get very, very jealous of the baby. Right. So there are issues that we have to deal with as humans that Mishle helps us with. That maybe some animals have to deal with as well. So the thing about Mishle, though, is that it's not very well organized. Psukim are topsy-turvy. There's sometimes two or even three psukim, one after the other, that are connected, but usually not. You can have a pasuk that talks about how to avoid the ills of substance dependency, usually wine in Mishle. And then the next pasuk talks about jealousy and anger. Okay, so you have a choveret that I gave out, right? The beginning of the year. Okay, so there is a section where I give you the various issues in Mishle by a topic. It's a very simple thing to do. We just go through the 31 chapters and isolate all the psukim that talk about anger, and all the bad things that anger can do to us, and et cetera, et cetera. Keep going on. There is a sefer that does this very well. It doesn't say that it sets out to do this, but it's obvious. The book is called Orchos Tzadikim. Have you heard of it? And it's very popular in the yeshiva world now. It wasn't when I went to yeshiva, but it's become very popular. First time I ever taught Mishle, when I was in Stern College, it was the last minute the teacher had a heart attack, Nebuch, and he asked me like a few days before the semester to teach the course. And I had to put something together quite quickly, but we did it with the help of Orchos Tzadikim. It was really very helpful. And so he has numerous sha'arim, gates, the gate of joy, the gate of jealousy, the gate of anger. You know, there's different midos. Deos, right? And he basically codifies for us what we need to know about all of these. Now, certainly before Hilchos Tzaddikim, you have the Rambam, Hilchos Deos, you have Pirkei Avos. I mean, there's certainly material out there that's quite helpful. The point is that this literature wants to teach us, the sapiential literature, that you have lots of mitzvahs, you have teaching you how to conduct yourselves with respect to what you eat and how you work and how you rest and how you conduct yourself with your spouse. So, but this is to help you just become a better person. Okay. Do you remember? I think before the break, we told you about dinu, kapsu, and shapru. Remember those three words, right? So our sages teach us that the five books of the Torah, is that you can't say, well, Vayikra is the most important book because it has the most mitzvahs. Right? Especially germane now in Parshas Bereishis, that for us, and it's very clear that Rashi reads Torah this way. Look carefully at Rashi in the first two chapters of Sefer Bereishis, and he is so intent, even though it's very midrashic. He came to the objection of many of the, especially the Spanish and Sephardi commentaries, who thought that he was too he was writing for children. By the way, they may be right. Chamisha Lamikra. He's writing to make the Torah accessible for young children. While this commentary reads for older people as well. That's the beauty of the Perush. Right? A 10-year-old can't read even Ezra. Not getting anywhere. But a 10-year-old can read Rashi. Right? Rashi is telling us all the time that things like Shnei Ha'oros HaGedolim, and then the next pasuk, one is bigger and one is smaller. Rashi sees a contradiction there. Rashba, Ibn Ezra, Sikhan. So he's telling us that one is the source of the light, one reflects the light, and they'll both look big from the standpoint of the earthling's eye. Total eclipse of the sun is the obvious proof of that. Right? But but Rashi cares to teach messages from these things. By the way, Ibn Ezra agrees, as does Rashbam, that it's good for the Jew to derive these messages. I want you to make this very clear. It's just that they don't feel it. Those messages belong in a perush that you claim is pshat. You know what I'm saying? These things, they say, leave it for Medrash Rabbah. As long as if you claim in your perush, I'm going to extract various midrashic messages to make Jews better people from the biblical text. Isn't that what we do in our sermons on Shabbos morning, right? Right? There's a good reason why what we call what a rabbi does in the morning on Shabbos a drasha. We don't call it a pshata, right? We drash, okay? But Rashi does say very early on in his perush, Anilo Basilo Lepshut Shamikra. I'm coming to give you pshat, right? Now in Mishlei, there are multiple layers to reading Mishlei. Multiple layers to reading any book of Tanakh, of course, but or Tehillim. Who are the enemies that are eating up my flesh in chapter 27 of Tehillim? Really, I have enemies that will eat up my flesh? That could be a chemotherapy treatment. It could be, there are commentaries that look to broaden the scope of sapiential literature. I'm not going to talk about narrative now. Of course, there are many different ways to understand Yosef's struggle with his brothers. What was the real dispute between them? It's simple. But that even the sapiential literature has this approach. So the books of the Tanakh that fit this are the books of MS, right? Backwards, Eov, Mishlei, Tehillim. These are known as Sifrei Emet, right? And of course, you need to add Koheles into this list. Okay. Everyone understand these? Okay. They are... I have no doubt that you have some psukim in Habakkuk and Yeshayahu that are part of this issue. But the book is not dedicated in its totality. These are books that Mom is dedicated to these issues. Okay? I believe just to review that we discussed the difference between these
these three, Mishlei, Tehillim, and Koheles. Koheles is tends to move in the pessimistic direction, right? It comes to a conclusion that, you know, even though life often stinks, it's all we got, so let's make the best of it, right? And he tells you no less than 7 times throughout the book, just get married, enjoy your bread, echol b'simcha lachmecha, as a pasuk in Koheles. Not that that's going to make everything hunky-dory. No, I think what Koheles is saying in these psukim is, if you have those things to fall back on, a loving relationship, and you have, let's say, if it's a kalim that you feel you like, or you know, the Gemara Bracha says, kalim na'im, isha na'im, and dirna enhances the well-being of a person. Right? Now, be careful with that, because there's always a nicer kli to use, and a nicer car, and a nice bigger house. So you have to be careful. Obviously, there would be some meh for help. The man has to feel that he's the king of his own castle, so to say. But Koheles is telling us that if you find that person or those things to fall back on, it will make you better capable of dealing with life's mishigas, call it that. Right? Okay, because there will be mishigas. Okay? There are no guarantees. It's just that play the percentages. The Gemara has the temerity to say, Shluchei mitzvos eino nizokin. If you're doing a mitzvah, you never get harmed. But the Gemara knows that the story about the boy who walks down after doing 2 mitzvahs to guarantee long life, he listens to his father send away the mother, but on his way down, he falls and dies. He dies at the age of 10. Had he refused that day to do 2 mitzvahs to guarantee long life, he may have lived 67 years longer. What does that even mean? So there's a great philosophical moment in the Talmud when the Gemara asks, why did he die? This question is asked in 2 Masechtos. One is in Chagiga, which deals with a lot of theodicy issues in the second parak. It's called Ein Dorshin. And there the Gemara just says, well, maybe on the way down he thought of worshipping Avodah Zarah, and Hashem took him like Chanoch in this week's Parsha. And how do you know that? You know what I'm saying? You're behaving like Eov's friends, who know better than Eov why he's suffering so much. Right? Sound familiar, right? Okay. Ha'enosh me'elohai Elohai yitzdok, they tell him. Shall you be more righteous than God? Just man up and take it on the chin. Stop complaining. We must have made a mistake when we thought you were such a righteous man. And he says, you know, I can deal with all the suffering, I can deal with all the losses, but I can't deal with my friends being so sure that I deserve it all. Right? Okay, so Koheles takes that direction. If we have those things, we'll be capable of dealing with life's inevitable mishigas. The Gemara's response, however, in Chulin, the last parak of Maseches Chulin, is called Parak Shiluach HaKein. It's all the laws of sending away the mother bird. It's a short parak. And the Masechta, Maseches Chulin, I don't know if you've learned it yet, Maseches Chulin ends by asking this question: why did the kid die? It introduces into the discussion a new answer. It said the kid died because the father sent him up on a rickety ladder. See, when we say Shluchei Mitzvos Eino Nizokin, this is not a scientific statement that runs through and through. There's a Gemara in Pesachim Dav Ches that says that's why Shmuel HaNavi said to God, I'm not sure if it's safe for me to ask to crown David king, right? And the Gemara in Yuvamas has God telling him, you're right, it's dangerous. If Shaul finds out that you're crowning someone else king, he'll kill you. So this is what you should do. If anybody asks you, this is what you should say. Right?
The Radak in his commentary to Shmuel Bet, Shmuel Aleph, says the exact opposite. He's being independent of the Gemara, obviously, but he says that, I want you to draw attention to yourself. What are you afraid of? I told you to crown David king. How could anything bad happen to you as a result? Right? The Gemara, I think, in this case, is being more realistic. Gemara says, if the danger is shchiach, right? The danger is present. Of course, you have to be careful. Right? When Hashem told David, "You're going to be king," and then he sees, I mean, it's the same question that Shaul wants to kill him. Shaul is sure that he's going to be the next king. Everybody else is trying to tell him, "What are you talking about? He's your son's best friend. Your son will be the next king." Everyone but Shaul was telling him that. But the reader knows that Shaul is right. He has good reason to be jealous of David. Right? David never lets on that he expects to be king. In other words, when Shaul is facing him with an army of soldiers trying to kill him, David should just say, "Make my day, Shaul. God crowned me king. There's no way you can do anything to me." Shaul would have killed him right there, and then the prophecy would have been there. There wouldn't be a book of Shmuel today. Right? Or it wouldn't have played out the way it does. Right? You know what I'm saying? This is a faith and doubt working together. David has faith he will become king. I think this is what's going on with Avram Avinu at the Akedah. God told him, "Ki b'Yitzchok yikorei lecha zera." It's Zara in the plus. Yitzchok is your future. Yitzchok has no children yet. And now you're telling me to just cut off his head. How does that work? But you know, God, I'm just an amoeba. I don't know how you work. I'm going to do it. I don't know. I don't know how, you know, you walk in the darkness. You're mysterious. Avram knows how to challenge God. He did in the same parasha. Right? He just said, "I don't need to challenge God in this story." And he was telling the truth when he told his people, we're going up to the mountain and we will return to you. Rashi said he was lying to keep them off suspicion. Because if Avram told them, "I'm going up there to kill my son," they wouldn't let him. This other approach is the approach of Shimshon for Hirsch. Right? God appears to us to be contradictory. Right? I know of a case of a boy who went to check his tefillin. On the way back, he picked up his tefillin, and it was such a freak accident. A truck going the other way on the highway lost a wheel, and the wheel bounced on the highway right into his windshield, killed him instantly. About 30 years ago. Had he decided after high school, "I'm not wearing tefillin anymore. I'm finished. No tefillin," he would live longer. Right? So don't tell me, in every case, Shmuel Mitzvah saying he's okay. What does the Gemara mean when it says that? 84% of the time, Shmuel Mitzvah saying he's okay. That still leaves a huge gap. Right? Maybe, I don't know. I don't know the statistic. I'm not up there in the Shemayim. But I'm sure there's some kind of IRS man up there who's taking these statistics. Right? And he says, you know, every year there's a different percentage. Right? As long as it's 51%, that's all I ask to make sense of this Gemara. Right? I probably want some kind of a bigger, not a landslide, but probably want 60, 60, 40, 70, 30. Get my point. Okay. All right. So that's Koheles taking the pessimistic side, because if you have Murphy's Law, right? Because when just 10% goes wrong, that's why someone writes Koheles. I expect you to come through every time. Okay. What Koheles does not avail himself, as Mishlei doesn't, Taylor hints at it, but the sapiential literature in our sources, in Eov, you have to delve into it. They don't respond to our struggles by saying, "Just hold out. There's another world after this." That's Pirkei Avos. Olam Hazeh Demeli Prozdor Olam Demeli Trakli. Are you kidding me? This is just nothing. You would realize what we're preparing for afterwards. Ugh. Right? These books do not do not just come out with it to say, okay, all right, life stinks, you know, there's lots of inconsistencies, but it'll all even out. Adra, Koheles does the opposite. At the end of chapter 3, he says, were you paying attention to this? Shabbos HaMoed, he says, who knows if when we die, we're going any other place besides the end. That, Lechora, says the Meiri, is what the rabbis had in mind when they said Koheles is not part of Tanakh. Because that's heretical to us. Right? You lose your Olam Haba for that in itself, says the Gemara. Says that the mission is at the end of Sanhedrin. Got it? Okay. Now, Mishle, by definition, I think you've gotten this already, Mishle has to be very optimistic. Okay? There are some pessimistic psukim in Mishle. Like some people die before their time. There's a few psukim that speak about that. So, what? This man is so smart. Of course some people die before their time. We see it. And I'm not talking about like a Bensar or Mora who's already demonstrating behavior, right, that's going to say if he continues in this way, he's going to kill a lot of people. And let him die now before he does all that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about an innocent 20-year-old who dies of leukemia. And he's been a tzaddik his whole life. Okay. So Mishle is that Dereis Tzilin is really a combination of both. Right? I just remember these two prokim, Lamed Zayin and Lamed Ches. It's the most amazing juxtaposition of any two prokim that you could imagine in Tanakh. Tehillim Perek Lamed Zayin is a most amazing faithful pasuk in Tanakh, a perek in Tanakh. If you hear this, the meek shall inherit the earth. You ever hear of that? People think it's from Jesus. It's from Perek Lamed Zayin of Tehillim. The meek shall inherit the earth. That perek talks about four groups that inherit the earth. Meek, tzaddikim, pure, and it says to horim and to me. But okay, but be that as it may, the whole chapter, it's about 40 psukim. It just goes on and on and on about how everything works out for the righteous. And Perek Lamed Ches 38 is some of the most pessimistic psukim. It looks like it belongs in Koheles. Because that's life. Today it's this, tomorrow it may be that. At the very least, it should make us humble, which is one of the main points of Mishle. Right? Eov we just touched upon briefly. Right, so this is our list of sapiential literature. Okay, got it? You all with me? All right, now, narrative can also be considered sapiential literature. The Ramban points this out in this week's parsha. It says, Zeh Sefer Toldot Adam. That's just the beginning of Perek Hey. Okay. Ze Sefer Toldot Adam. From here, we may be able to determine that this guy's name is actually Adam. Right? Because he's usually called Ha-Adam, the man. Unless you want to say that this pasuk is not talking about the first man, and it's not talking about a genealogy listing from Adam and Hem and Shase and then down the line, although that's the simple pshat of what it is. Ramban elaborates and says, this book, Not this chapter, but this book. Not just Bereishis, the whole Torah. Can you elaborate? It's the Toldos Adam. Ramban wrote a book called Toldos Adam. What do a Toldos mean here? Can you figure it out? Toldos. Not just generations, but Toldos. Because if Toldos means generation, right, then every time it appears, the children should follow. And it hardly ever does. Ela toldos Noach, Noach is tzaddik ha'iman. Ela toldos Yaakov, Yosef ha'yod, and Shmaz, Shas v'shanom. It should say, Ela toldos Yaakov, Uri Shimon, maybe you knew. Ela told us Yitzchak ben Avram. Avram is Yitzchak. Yitzchak ben Avram. Ela told us Yitzchak. Yaakov Esav. Rashi meant that Yaakov Esav. Hamorim Parsha. Right.
So Toldos means, and Ibn Ezra uses a, there's a pasuk in Mishlei. It says nobody knows what's going to happen down the line, and the pasuk says Ma Yaled Yom, which literally seems to mean what the day will give birth to. Right? You don't know what this boy, it's a girl, is it healthy, is it big, is it small, is it right? So you don't know what the day is giving birth to. So a toldos means the occurrences, the happenings, the story of man.
Okay? That's it. Okay, now, in your Choveret, I give you many different formulas of the problem.
Most are chiastic in nature. What I mean by that is, a chi is an X in Greek. Right? Okay, so chiastic means that the first part of the pasuk begins with a certain exhortation, right? And the second contrasts that.
Okay? That's probably the most common example of it. Okay? That's what appears on this second page. The first page of your Choveret, I just want to introduce you to this book. It's called a BDB.
That's how the world refers to this book. It's
Rosh Tabor for Brown, Driver, and Briggs. I think I wrote it at the top here, does it say? All right, it's called an English, Hebrew and English Lexicon to the Old Testament. Brown, Driver, and Briggs were three Gentiles who took every word of the Bible, of the Tanakh, and wrote them all in alphabetical order, including names, and it gives you the various similarities between Hebrew and other ancient languages. Very valuable sometimes. Right? To know how was Shin Mem Resh used in Akkadian. You know, these are close relatives, they're Semitic languages, right? And when I run into a difficult terminology in Hebrew, right? So maybe the way this word is used in Ugaritic or Akkadian or Arabic or American may be helpful to us. Or Syriac. So that first page tells you the various usages of Mishlei, of the word Mishlei. What's a mashal? Why does it say by Bilam, by Yisa Mishalo? He picked up the burden of his mashal. Right? We tend to translate our book as Proverbs, right? And a proverb is where I tell you something and it's meant to be symbolic of something else. There was a man in your kingdom who was very rich and he had many, many sheep, right? And there's another man in your kingdom, he's very poor, he just had one sheep that he loved very much. Right? You know what story I'm telling right now, right? Yeah? Which is what? After David took Bathsheba, the prophet told him his story. Okay? It was really beyond normal to tell how much this man loved that one sheep. Okay? So then one day, a passerby, a halach, came to the rich man's house, and the rich man didn't want to take any of his own sheep, the many sheep he had, to give to the guest. Now it goes from a halach to being an oreach. Instead, he took the one lone sheep of the man who loved that sheep so much, and he slaughtered it and fed it to the... Now it's ish. Ish ha-boil. This is all one pasuk. It's a long pasuk. It's Shmuel bet perik yud bet pasuk dalet. So now, just I'm using this as an example because it's probably the best best example of a mashal, of a story in Tanakh. Who's the rich man? Who's the poor man? If you don't know his name, just say he's Bathsheba's husband, right? Got it? Are you all with me on this? All right, Uri Achiti. Okay. The sheep, the one lone sheep is Bathsheba, right? The story is not exactly as what happened, because he would have to kill the poor man afterwards also. He had him killed. All right, but it's, you know, David pronounced a sentence on this guy. Right? And then the prophet can tell him what are the two words he tells him. David says, the man who did this is so cruel, he should die and pay fourfold for the sheep. So what does the prophet tell him? You are that man. Atah ish. Right? Someone like Shaul would try to, you know, hem and haw, but David takes it right on the chin. Right? How he didn't figure it out. I mean, the man who writes Tehillim with all kinds of, you know, amazing linguistic gymnastics doesn't figure out that it's him. Well, he was busy with something, I don't know. So the prophet uses this parable. Okay, there's something interesting the parable tells me that I might not have known from the story. In fact, I might have determined from the story the exact opposite of the parable. Because from the parable, it's mashma that the poor man loved his wife very much. Loved the sheep, you know what I'm saying? It's mashma from the parable that Uriah loved his wife very much. I'm not sure it's mashma from the story. Remember, Uriah's been in battle for months. The king tells you to go home. You don't rush to get home to your beloved wife. Even though you're very, very faithful to your men and you're, you know, the king, you have an excuse. Go home, bring her a box of chocolates, bring her some flowers, you know. We all know why David wants him to go home, yeah? Okay, Rashi says it very simply. Okay. And some of Horsham say that had he gone home, David would have forgotten about the whole thing. Okay. When he refuses to go home, David has to act very quickly. She's going to give birth eight and a half months from now. Mustama did not wait the 3 months you're supposed to wait after a husband dies. Right? So at least it can appear that it's my seven-month child. The child died, you know. So it could be premature or something like that, you know, in the eyes of the people. But if Uriah goes home, then when she has a baby, some 8.5 months from now, he'll remember, oh, that was, yeah, I came home, yeah, it's with my wife, I remember that. Okay, so that's an example of a parable, Pashut, right? There are others in Tanakh. You should know them, some are more famous than others, but, so that's something. Now, but the parable, you know, that, I mean, do I have to explain things in Mishlei that relate to something more? I mean, we discussed this earlier regarding the discipline, right? Remember I explained how to read Mishlei as a book of Tanakh as opposed to just as a book of like Mishlei ben Sira. We discussed that, right? So the difference is that if you're reading Mishlei ben Sira and something seems unusually strange or it doesn't sound biblical, throw it out. Don't accept it. Right? Okay, but you're not going to do that if the book is canonical. The Torah says this boy is so rebellious, he's behaving like a glutton. He's zolel v'sovei. It's not clear what he has to do to be considered zolel v'sovei. So if you know the Gemara, the 8th Perek in Sanhedrin, it says, we determine what zolel v'sovei is from a pasuk in Mishlei. I wouldn't do that. I would not do that with unless the book is considered canonical. Right? And what happens if in the same book I run up to psukim that I just think by my sensitivity, the Tanakh has to be everlasting. I don't want to hit my children. And we're living in a time where you can go to jail for doing that if you do it in public. People don't hit their kids now. But in my living memory, and I'm not so old, I remember teachers in where I went to school up the block that not just slapped kids, punched kids, kicked them. Right? So, and parents were happy, yeah, okay, put knock some sense into this kid. Today, if a teacher even touches a kid, grabs his hand, forget it. Right? And we can say that's right. I'm not bemoaning the fact, oh, it was so much better when we were able to hit kids. Right? Something's changed. And I think it's in a good way. Okay? So what we do is we have a leeway in reinterpreting what Chosech Shivto Sone Beno. And that pasuk, Shevet, which means if you keep the rod or the belt or the, you know, the staff away from your child's bottom, you hate him. Right? So Shevet, the good commentary tries to show how the word Shevet elsewhere in the Bible, right, is used not literally, you get it? Parable now. Not literally as a shtekin, you know, someone hit someone. I could get away with just saying, okay, it's Mishle, it's parables. It's not a real staff. It's something that represents a staff. No, I've found Pesukim in Yeshayahu and elsewhere where the word Shevet is actually used that way. Okay, you get it? Okay, I'm doing all this because we had almost a month off, so I'm getting us back to speed here. Okay, so most of Mishle has this chiastic kind of structure to it. The lazy man folds his hands and has nothing to eat. The industrious man puts food on the table. You know, it's all right. You get it? It's not all that way. Some of it goes, you know, just reiterates the same message twice. Okay. It could still be like a chiastic kind of structure, like Rabin Chatosechem. Rabin Pishechem. The Atsumin Chatosechem. So on that page, there are just so many different structures that this is actually I should say this is not a chiastic structure. This is just straight through. Chiastic would be Rabbi Pishechem v'chatoseichem atzumin. Okay. I want to introduce you to, I think I told you about the Gro, the Vilna Gaon's parish of the Mishle, okay, where he is profoundly a close reader in Mishle. I'm going to nitpick every single word while using this word, a different word. Okay. All right. Does your Mishle's Gedolos have a Gro in it? Usually printed by itself. Okay. So what I have here is two versions of Mishle. I have another one there with full Mikros Gedolos. Right. I gave you the Mishle with the, as this is Rashi, the Rokeach. Right. See it? Now, the Rokeach has had a resurgence in popularity of late. There's a certain Hasidus, the Hasidus Rebbe, his name's last name is Rokeach, he's a direct descendant of Belzer Rebbe. Right, so, so if you just see what this kind of perush is what made me, sort of the realization that this is the Rokeach to begin with, because only he comes up with this kind of stuff. Take a look, if you will, on Perek Aleph Pasuk Hey. Yishma Chacham v'Yosef Lekach v'Navon Tachlo v'Kneh. Now, if you recall, I asked you earlier this semester to try to figure out what's the introduction of Mishlei. Some commentaries say it's the first nine prokimis, the introduction, which is to try to convince you that this is a worthwhile book to study. Okay, because there's no doubt that in chapter 3, chapter 4, there are lots of examples of what you would call parables. Right? But he's still, all the way up to the end of chapter 9, he's trying to, various psukim, trying to convince you this is a worthwhile endeavor. It's the first great book of Musar. The Torah has long before Mishlei was written, expects of us that our character will be shaped by our actions. Right? Okay. I just want to, let's read this pasuk. Yishma Chacham, when a Chacham listens, Yosef Lekach, Chacham is always looking. Everything he's doing, he's always looking for more information. What am I learning from this? I'm looking at that caterpillar climb up the tree. What am I getting from this? Right? Okay, he's always trying to Yosef Lekach. Here Lekach means something. What am I taking? What's the takeaway? V'navon tachbulos yikne. Navon means like, Bina is understanding, right? Now, here's an interesting thing. Tachbulos is usually used in Tanakh with a negative connotation. In fact, there are a number of such words in Sefer Mishlei that have negative connotations throughout the rest of Tanakh, but in Mishlei, it's a good thing. Tachbulos here is definitely a good thing. This is not a chiastic pasuk where the first part is the good stuff, the last part is the bad stuff, and vice versa. No. He's telling us straight through. A chacham is always looking to add more knowledge, and the navon is looking to acquire tachbulot. Mazet tachbulot. Even the shorish looks bad. See the shorish? What's the shorish of tachbulot? Chaval, chabalah. It's like, you know, shorish is bad, right? In Mishlei, especially this word, Orma, it appears in this week's parsha. The Nachash was more Arum than all the other animals. What do you think that means? What does Arum mean usually? What was the Arumness of the snake? Usually it's translated as crafty. I think that's wrong. No animal is crafty at all to say that the snake was more crafty than all the others. It has to be something that other animals have that the snake has more than they do. Simple pshat, you don't have to go. But the word arma definitely, arum, definitely means it's usually a negative terminology. I think it means naked. The snake is more naked than other animals. Other animals have fur. The snake is more like man in his skin. Anyway, that's the Pidach Hasid. So in Mishlei, to be crafty is a good thing. To have tachbulos is a good thing. Tachbulos means you have smarts, you have street smarts. Be careful, don't be naive. Naivete is one of the great sins of Sefer Mishlei. Be on top of your game. You have to be crafty in order to have Yiras Shamayim. It's a uniquely Mishlei kind of thing. Right? And the Rokeach, together with his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, were big, they used the word a lot. L'olam Yehi Odom Arum B'Yira. Make sure that you're crafty about your morality.
because chesed can be stupid. I see it sometimes. Usually when the government does it, it's stupid. You have to be smart about your chesed. Okay. So look what the rokeach does with this pasuk. Take a look. You see the hand at the bottom. Perish your rokeach. Got it? Leif shoten naseh chacham binan Torah. You can even have a foolish heart, but if that person studies Torah, he can turn himself around. Ani lo kol shekein. Ani means the person reading this. I'm not a shoten. I'm able to read this. How much more so will I get from Torah? Umedrash kol makom shepolik rabba barak Yosef. Halacha k'rabba chutz me'elu kilom makomos. Siman yishma rashitemos Yosef. Sudet mechitza inyan. Because it's a medrash. See the word Yosef? Right? So he says that the halacha is only like Yosef. I have a big footnote at the bottom about how this is so. Okay. But he's trying to show that this is the kind of stuff the Rokeach does. Right? This is an extreme example. To say that this pasuk bears light on the Talmudic discussion of Tali Paskin is that's his derech. But I'll tell you this. We'll be doing a lot of this aside. Is that he will take certain psukim about, let's say, jealousy and show how it relates to the story of Yosef. See, this is the beauty of this parish, is that you can hear a pasuk about sibling rivalry, but when it's put into the relief of a story you know, then it can start to talk to you. Because you have siblings too. You have jealousies too. You have dreams also. Right? Okay, we're going to close with that. We are going to be doing next class. Come with your Mishlei. I want to do Perek Zion next class. Inside. Okay. Before the break, we also did some of Perek Dalid inside. Remember Perek Dalid? We did some of the world view psukim of Perek Dalid. Perek Dalid is an amazing Perek of Mishlei. And we wrote on the board psukim that are the most important psukim in the Tanakh. So a lot of them come from Perek Dalid. Amazing. Right? So it's still part of the introduction of why you should read this book. All right? We're gonna open up to Perek Zion with Shem next class. Okay? Make sure to come with it. Okay? Thank you. Thank you, Richard.